This is The Conversation. I'm your host today, John Stevenson. I'm in the studio with Dylan from the news department and Elizabeth Menetre, who is the program director at KMUN. Elizabeth has a personal story about the moon landing that we'll get to. The phone number here. 503-325-0010. And we're here to talk about the moon landing, which has its 50th anniversary on Saturday. 503-325-0010. There's a lot of information in the media, historical data, controversy, conspiracy, many, many things about the moon landing. But what we're interested in today is your personal story. If you were around at that time, what you felt like, what you saw, what people around you were saying. That's what we'd love to hear from you. Just to give you a timeline, we'll roll it back to the 12th of September, 1959, when the Russians, Luna 2, launched this vehicle or critter called Luna 2, unmanned. And it crashed on the moon, and that was the first space body that ever made it that far. And there was a good deal of information that was derived from that. And that date of September 12, 1959 is usually given as the date that the space race started. Roll it forward a few years later, to the 12th of September, 1962, John Kennedy said, "We'll be on the moon before the 60s is over." And that was a goal. It was also a direct order to NASA that they needed to put somebody on the moon before the end of the decade. A lot of controversy throughout the 60s in concerning the cost versus the value of the whole thing. John Kennedy died in November 1963, and LBJ took it up, added more money to the NASA budget, and hung on to John Kennedy's goal of reaching the moon before the end of the decade. There were cuts and arguments, many things, and the Ruskies were after it as well. So there was a race going on. And then on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin walked on the moon. All three of the astronauts on that trip were the same age, 39 years old. Neil Armstrong passed away in 2012. Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins are still alive. Michael Collins held down the fort while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin went on the surface of the moon and touched and smelled and experienced things no human beings had ever done before. So that's the setup to what happened 50 years ago. And as I said in the beginning of the show, we're interested in your personal stories about that era. If you were an eyewitness, if you were a little kid, any impressions that you may have had, any opinions that you may have held throughout the 60s, or if you weren't around then, what your impression is of the whole thing. We're at 503-325-0010. I want to turn it over now to Elizabeth, who has a familial, personal story about what was going on in the 60s and some observations and hope for space in the future.
What did they smell on the moon, John?
They tried to describe it. I can read you a quote.
No, that's okay. You've got me thinking. But thank you. And anyone who knows me at all well knows that I'm crazy about stuff to do with space, and that really is to do with my dad. I grew up right in the shadow of JPL NASA in La Cañada, California, and my dad was very involved with the space program. So my early memories when I was a little kid was of my dad coming home from work, and actually he was part of the Ranger program, which took the very first photos of the moon, and those photos would come, and Dad would actually bring copies home. And I actually was one of the first people in the world to see photos of the moon. So to me, I was so excited. And we had the music from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I know it was composed not by Stanley Kubrick. But that excitement with 2001, A Space Odyssey, that came out in 68, right before, shortly before the moon landing, just dovetailed for me into this deeply personal experience. And I've always had optimism and excitement about space exploration and space travel and the future, because I was brought up in this very optimistic, my dad was just so excited about what we were doing and the future, and those were very optimistic different times, the 60s. And controversy about funding and everything else aside, the optimism and hope was so deep. And I'd love to hear from someone, 503-325-0010. What was your experience at that time? Do you remember watching the landing? Do you remember what your feelings were about it? Because I sure remember looking up in the sky and just being in awe.
You know, you talk about the optimism and hope. It was bipartisan. Take away the controversy, as you said, and the money matters. And the 60s had many other things going on, but it was unifying for America to think about the moon landing. And I think for most people, it was a non-cynical thing. It was the next step for mankind. It was hopeful. It defined the future. And it was a spot of optimism in a difficult decade. Speaking of the smell, let me read you something from Neil Armstrong. The moon has a smell. It has no air, but it has a smell. Each pair of Apollo astronauts to land on the moon tramped lots of moon dust back into the lunar module. It was deep gray, finely grained, and extremely clingy. And when they unwrapped their helmets, Neil Armstrong said, "We were aware of a new scent in the air of the cabin that clearly came from the lunar material."
John Stevenson, I think we're all wondering about how the moon smells, but we do have a caller on the air. Hello, this is Coast Community Radio. You're on the air right now.
I was a little girl when the moon landing happened. I was 5, and I was staying with my grandparents out in Iowa, and we watched it on TV. And then the whole family went out to look at the moon, and I remember looking up and expecting to see the astronauts. I thought that since they were the only thing on the moon, we would be able to see them clear as day. And I was quickly disabused of that notion, but I still remember the feeling of wonder that there were people up there, that we had reached something we'd never reached before. And the adults were as excited as the kids, even though they knew more than I did, and it was amazing.
I wonder if that was something that happened all over America, that either, I wasn't in America at the time, but was it on TV?
Yes.
Of course, yeah. It was. People were watching all over the world. I think the excitement was global, absolutely. It wasn't just an American accomplishment. I think it was that, what did he say, for all mankind?
Yeah, right. And I just went and looked up to see if it happened prime time, because I thought maybe I had conflated it to be a television event that I had seen and a nighttime event.
You know, I felt the same way, and I looked it up. It was 1:17 in the afternoon that the Eagle landed on the moon, Pacific time.
Not moon time.
Not moon time. So it was 1:17 in the afternoon that they touched down, and then about, says right before 7 p.m. Pacific time that he actually stepped out.
Right, yeah, because we were in Iowa, so it was evening. So we did see it at night and did go out in the evening, because I thought maybe my memories had made it be such a dramatic event, but really it wasn't. And so I imagine people did go out and look up in the big sky and, you know,
that's funny,
make it all come together.
Even though I was alive then, when I listened to you and Elizabeth talk about going outside and looking at the moon, I thought that was all you could do. To this moment, I didn't know it was on TV.
Everybody was probably watching the same stations, too, right? There were three channels, so we were experiencing it all together the way people did back then. I don't know to whom they would have been listening, Walter Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley, probably, right?
Yeah. Well, it was a huge, huge event. And
shared achievement.
Yeah, and I still look up at the moon and have awesome feelings about it.
Yeah.
But thank you very much for your call.
Thanks. Thanks for having this conversation. I think it's good to remember when we had dreams and we achieved things, and we're doing it again. We're going to the moon and then to Mars. I think it's a great thing.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention was, I don't know how many people know that, but we came very, very close to a disaster right before Armstrong and Aldrin landed on the moon. Is about 30 seconds before touchdown, there were some problems, and Armstrong was a brilliant pilot. And that's why he was selected to pilot the lunar module. And he had to take over from the computer because there were some mixed signals coming in. And he had to do part of that manually. It was not all landed by computer. There was actually some hands-on manual flying going on in the last minute as they touched down. And they came 25 seconds from having to abort that whole thing. But he saved it, and they had to go over. He actually had to fly over some boulders, past the rim of a crater, and find a clear spot to land. And he did, and it was successful. And that ties into my dad's story, in that he was involved in taking those first photos where they picked out, where are we going to land? Where are we going to land the first ships, the first craft that go to the moon?
It was extremely dangerous. It was never sure. It wasn't like getting on an airplane that never crashes. This was all brand new stuff. And one thing to bring that into perspective is to think about the Saturn rocket, which was 14 stories high, and on the top was this tiny little capsule with three guys in it, sitting atop this gigantic Roman candle that was going to throw them into outer space. I mean, it seems so primitive, yet it was the best we could possibly do. It was computers in their infancy and technology that had not exactly been road tested at that point.
Well, one thing, there was so much excitement that went on with this landing and the early missions of Apollo. But there were plans to have more missions to Apollo. The last mission, number 17, that was it. But there were plans for more missions, and what they were going to do was look at the possibility of establishing a moon base. That was the plan. But it didn't quite go that way, and we'll be right back with more. Please call us, 503-325-0010. We would love to hear from you. And you are listening to Coast Community Radio. I'm Elizabeth Menetre, Program Director at KMUN, and I'm here with John Stevenson and Dylan H.S.
Hauser Schalk, that
Thank
is.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you.
And we're talking about the moon landing, the anniversary, which happened July 20th. It's Pacific time, 1:17 p.m. And one thing was that we were planning to build a moon base, and that all went askew for different reasons. There, we were mired in the Vietnam War. Nixon wanted to have his own stamp on the space program, et cetera, et cetera. So we did not pursue having a moon base back in the early 70s. Instead, the direction went to something, a project called Skylab, and morphed into International Space Station and the shuttle program. The shuttle they called the space truck, because basically it was to bring supplies and people back and forth to the International Space Station. I'm wondering, Dylan, as a younger person, of course you were not alive when this happened, but does it seem like a remote science fiction, or does it seem like, what is it? Is it like ancient history to you?
Well, I can only speak anecdotally to my own experience, and I don't want this to represent every young person, because they may have very different opinions than I do, but I'm almost in tears of your speech about looking up at the moon and this amazing sense of awe, because that's something I'll never have. Because to me, when I look up at the moon, it seems like charted territory.
Oh.
Because I didn't get to experience it. I would have loved to be back in your time to witness the first people on the moon. Because I look up there now and it's just like a been there, done that type of feeling.
Really?
So no, it doesn't seem like this amazing sense of science fiction, but I wish it did. I feel like I missed out on that wonder.
Oh, been there, done that. Oh, that's a perspective I hadn't even considered. What about Mars?
Now, Mars I feel a little bit differently towards. But, you know, I have these conflicting feelings between this great sense of wonder for Mars, but also this sense of abandonment for planet Earth. Obviously, with climate change, the way we disrespect our planet. I don't want going to Mars to just be running away from what we have here. Because mm-hmm. Mars may not only be a great technological achievement, but it might be the one we have to make in order to survive as a species. And I don't want that to be the disaster scenario. I want to go there, you know, and breathe easy. If we go to Mars, I want to go there with not a big weight on our shoulders that we have to do it in order to survive ourselves.
Right.
And the destruction we're imposing upon our own species.
Like a life raft, like having to evacuate this planet and move to another planet.
Yeah, and the solar system doesn't deserve that. And I try to have a great amount of respect for it, that we shouldn't tarnish this planet, Gaia, you know, in my opinion, the most beautiful in the whole solar system. But we destroy this planet and then move on to the next.
I hear you.
So if we do go to Mars, if I was the president, I would sink as much money as I possibly could into going to Mars, because there is that sense of wonder. But you know what else I would sink a lot of money into is saving both of the planets at the same time. That's just my opinion. I want to hear the community's opinion and hopefully another young person's perspective who may be different than mine. That's 503-325-0010.
The point you make is well taken, and I don't see why we can't do both. But the we in this case, ideally, are the inhabitants of Earth, not merely the United States, that for something meaningful to get done for planet Earth and for planet Mars seems like a global initiative, not a military one.
I would agree. And absolutely both. We know that we're in a situation on planet Earth that's getting more and more obvious. We also not only should be exploring Mars for those reasons, survival of the human species, but for the sake of exploration itself, because I think looking ahead, being excited about the future, something I had when I was 7 years old and looking at the first pictures of the moon, and knowing from my father, absolutely, with complete conviction, that we were going into space, that we were going to be exploring and living on other planets. I knew that from when I was a small kid. No doubt in my mind, and there still isn't. My dad really inspired me deeply. And I've taught fourth grade, and we've done educational units on space travel and the excitement the kids, you know, fourth graders, fifth graders, talking about outer space and the future. And yeah, we're going to do that. That's a big, important element of it, too.
I love that notion that the caller and you had, Elizabeth, of looking at the moon and looking for the people.
And speaking of callers, yeah, we may have another one right now. Hello, this is Coast Community Radio. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
This is Coast.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm an eschatologist and eco-feminist. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, we got you.
We can hear you.
Okay. I have a different perspective, and a lot of environmental people, I think, have been discussing what has happened since the first moon landing, especially with regards to mutation of space germs and mutated microbes that may enter into our environment and atmosphere 50 years after the first moon landing.
And so you're talking about when we went to the moon, we're bringing back life from the moon that may infect Earth?
Exactly.
Interesting.
Because we have an extremely toxic and polluted environment now than 50 years ago.
That's certainly true. I don't know if that's because of microbes from the moon, but, you know, if you just to cogitate it for a second, the moon is extremely...
No, my point was that the microbes from the moon may enter into our atmosphere and become mutated and become more predatory, and we may not have any defense against a new disease. So interplanetary disease is what one of our concerns as an environmentalist is.
Oh.
And if you recall, back in the 13th century, we had a very, very catastrophic plague called the bubonic plague, mm-hmm. and it came in waves. One was called the Black Death, and one was called the bubonic plague. Right before one of those plagues, something was seen coming from the sky, and it's recorded in William Defoe's book called The Plague Years. And, of course, as you know, the other Black Death was contributed to rats. But the sign from the sky, something fell from the sky. Evidently, it escaped Jupiter's gravitational pull, because, as you know, Jupiter has been called the celestial environmentalist by the ancient Africans.
One of the big questions I would have is that, you know, if there were to be a black moon plague to enter into Earth's atmosphere, in the course of 50 years, you know, we may, if it hasn't taken hold by now, we may have grown resistant to it already.
Yeah.
And I think
well,
as time
possible.
Goes on, the
You're
likelihood
right.
is
You're
going
right. it's
down.
Possible that the plague that happened in the 13th century in Europe, there could be an immunity to that. However, if I can be allowed to finish my point here.
Yes, go ahead.
The plague was preceded by a sign. Defoe wrote in his book, The Plague Years, and I hope you read this book. It's really interesting.
I have read it.
You have read it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you know he described the plague as a survivor, and in his village he described all the things that happened to people around him. One of the things, of course, was that the Europeans, the Caucasians, their skin turned black. They had these bobos. That's why they called it bubonic. They were bobos where the pus of the skin would turn black and become raised, and people were, in his Defoe's book, he described them as looking like spotted monkeys.
Yeah, I've read, the descriptions of the plague are pretty vivid. We do have to wrap it up, so I'll give you about 30 more seconds there, and we have to take another call.
Yes, thank you for allowing me to make my point, because you did say you want to hear a story, so it may just take a second, but I would like to say that I feel that we need to be careful about coming into an era of time and bringing in space germs that could mutate in our toxic environment and create a new interplanetary disease that we will not have a cure for.
I think it's a very interesting point that you've made and something that I have heard very little about. And I really appreciate your call. Thank you. And that's an interesting point from that caller. It's something I hadn't thought about. But if anybody remembers War of the Worlds, what happened to the Martians is that they were exposed to our environment and it killed them.
Well, I would be more concerned about the opposite happening, is that we're taking stuff out there instead of bringing stuff back here.
That's a very interesting point of view. And thank you for that insight.
And of course, the number here is 503-325-0010. We want to hear about your insights into the future, your concerns for the future.
Would you go to Mars?
I tell you, I would. And maybe your nostalgia for the past.
Really? Would you go to Mars, Dylan?
I don't know if I'd... I mean, I said I would sink the money into it, but I don't know if I'd strap up in the suit and do it more. I mean, it's a frightening. When you were talking about Neil Armstrong, you know, he sets the thing to manual control.
He had to take over from the computer to save the so they wouldn't crash in a boulder field.
It's semi-manual control, excuse me. So, you know, he is directing the thing himself. You know, T-minus 25 seconds. It's either we're going to run out of fuel and abort, or we're going to land the eagle. And that's a lot of responsibility, okay? Well, I feel like behind the engineering board on the radio, that's about, this is enough of a spaceship for me, okay? The fate of people's lives in my hands. I don't know if I could, you know, Neil Armstrong is an incredible influence.
He was a test pilot, and they had nerves of steel.
Yeah, I don't know if I have those nerves.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Well, this was, we're talking about way in the future when you're an old guy and everything's as safe as flying to San Diego.
Well, if I'm old and grizzled, maybe. I don't know. Would you fly to the moon? 503-325-0010 or Mars or any other planet.
There's an old hypothetical. You might remember it, Elizabeth, from the days back in the 60s or 70s where the hypothetical was if you were out in your backyard and all of a sudden a spaceship landed, somebody got out of the spaceship, walked up to you and gave you a pill and said, take this, and then flew away, would you?
That sounds like a really 60s type of story.
It was usually around a hookah.
Well, Jefferson Airplane went there, I think. Well, the conversation, we would love to hear from you. We still have time for a call. 503-325-0010. I'm firmly in the camp of that we should go to space not only for science but for our own inner sense of wonder and the future and exploring. And I know that we have to take if all the money that we spend on certain things, the huge amount of military budget we have, were spent on combating climate change and also into exploration that will greatly influence our future. And what we were talking about was science, the boost in science that happened with the moon landings and all the energy and money and excitement that went into it and how it does help the economy.
Yeah.
I think we have time for one more call.
The concept of it just being us and that how the space race, the competition with the Russians helped the thing move forward may not be the best way to go forward. It may be a global initiative.
I think the best way to go forward is with one more call. Hello, this is Coast Community Radio. You're on the airwaves.
Yeah, I'm here.
And we can hear you.
You're on the air.
It sounds like you're coming from the moon.
Well, I'm calling from Kathleen, but it's almost to the moon. Yeah, I would go. Sign me up.
All right.
I'm 76 in about a week, and we've already ruined this place, so let's get a start on a new one. No, seriously, we need to do something besides trash everything humans have ever been. I think we could probably go there with an environmental interest and hopefully be able to take care of something better than we've done in this place. It seems like humans have a propensity to destroy everything in our path just because it's there. And at this age, I think it's utterly disgusting that this is happening still to this day, that we can't go anywhere without. Look at the beaches after the 4th of July weekend. People can't even pick up after themselves.
Well, I certainly hope that when we go to Mars, that we're going to have a much better sense of how to take care of things. Hopefully we won't be ending up like, you know, they had to close the Everest base camp for too much trash up there. So we hopefully will be taking a lot better care.
I know, but where's that going to come from? Because nobody seems to care. When you talk about going to space,
care.
What we're saying talk about is the Space Force, which is militaristic, you know?
You care.
I do, but I'm old. And the young ones, what are the young ones doing? I don't know what they're doing. They're texting. All they do is walk around with their thumbs getting congratulated.
We have a 20-year-old right here with us.
I know.
He's a beam of future hope, I hope.
Oh,
I know.
Gosh.
I listen to you guys all. I used to be a programmer down there, so I know exactly.
You sound like
I'm
an old
about.
Marine.
Yeah, it could be, John.
That's you, Jim.
King of Cast Lambert, actually.
And But we do have, Dylan is a beam of light.
Yeah,
there is optimism. I have to be optimistic because I have a kid, and a lot of us, we have children and grandchildren. We need hope and optimism to go forward into this, into the world, and into the future.
I totally agree with you. I just hope beyond hope that we can actually pull this off as a species. You know, we need to come together as human beings, not Americans, not Russians, not Germans, not whatever. We need to come together as human beings.
Well, it's a very humanitarian effort, I would hope to believe. And I would also completely agree with you that we shouldn't be
happens,
going...
You know, I don't know that I live long enough to see that, but maybe my great-grandson will. And he's 4, so we'll see.
I hope so, too. Thank you very much.
You're very much welcome, and thank you for putting this show on. Too bad it's only a half hour.
Well, you can always send your feedback to coastradio.org if you'd like to be longer.
Okay, Dylan. I saw you on the air, too, buddy.
Hey, thank you, and I really appreciate your kind words.
I wanted to finish up. If anybody's interested in what the moon smells like by the two astronauts, one said it was the smell of wet ashes. This is something that, a sense that had never been entered into our species before. The smell of wet ashes is how it was to Neil Armstrong, to Buzz Aldrin. It was the smell in the air after a firecracker had gone off. Ooh. So there you go.
You've been listening to
Fresh
Coast
from the Moon
Community Radio. This has been The Conversation. You can find it as a podcast uploaded later today. Thank you for listening, everybody.